chapter 2. This morning, text number 11 and 12. These are the prayers by the demigods to Lord Krishna in the womb. And here we have, for Lord Krishna in the womb, here we have Lord speaking to Maya Devi. This is 12 is on the board. 11 and 12 have a shared purport. Let me read Sanskrit for 11. Number. Translation. Lord Krishna blessed Maya Devi by saying, in different places on the surface of the earth, people will give you different names, such as Durga, Bhadrakali, Vijaya, Vaishnavi, Kumuda, Chandika, Krishna, Madhavi, Kanyaka, Maya, Narayani, Ishani, Sharada, and Ambika. And purport by Srila Prabhupada. Because Krishna and his energy appeared simultaneously, people have generally formed two groups, the Shaktas and the Vaishnavas. And sometimes there is rivalry between them. Essentially, those who are interested in material enjoyment are Shaktas, and those interested in spiritual salvation and attaining the spiritual kingdom are Vaishnavas. Because people are generally interested in material enjoyment, they are interested in worshipping Maya Devi, the energy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Vaishnavas, however, are Shuddha Shaktas, or pure Bhaktas, because the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra indicates worship of the Supreme Lord's energy, Hara. A Vaishnava prays to the energy of the Lord for the opportunity to serve the Lord along with his spiritual energy. Thus Vaishnavas all worship such deities as Radha Krishna, Sita Ram, Lakshmi Narayan, and Rukmini Dwarkadish. Whereas Durga Shaktas worship the material energy under different names. The names by which Maya Devi is known in different places have been listed by Ballabhacharya as follows. In Varanasi, Varanasi or Kashi is also Banaras, Varanasi. She is known as Durga. In the Vanti, she is known as Bhadrakali. In Orissa, she is known as Vijaya. In Kulahapura, she is known as Vaishnavi or Mahalakshmi. The representatives of Mahalakshmi and Ambika means deities. The representatives of Mahalakshmi and Ambika are present in Bombay. In the country known as Kamarup, she is known as Chandika. In northern India, as Sharada. In Cape Comorin, as Kanyaka. Thus she is distributed according to various names in various places. Srila Vijayadwaj Tirthapat in his Padaratnavali Tika has explained the meanings of the different representations. Maya is known as Durga because she is approached with great difficulty, as Bhadra, because she is auspicious, as Kali, because she is deep blue. Because she is the most powerful energy, she is known as Vijaya. Because she is one of the different energies of Vishnu, she is known as Vaishnavi. And because she enjoys in this material world and gives facilities for material enjoyment, she is known as Kumuda. Because she's very severe to her enemies, the Asuras, she is known as Chandika. And because she gives all sorts of material facilities, she's called Krishna. In this way, the material energy is differently named and situated in different parts on the surface of the globe. Translation again. Lord Krishna blessed Maya Devi by saying, in different places on the surface of the earth, people will give you different names such as Durga, Bhadra, Kali, Vijaya, Vaishnavi, Kumuda, Chandika, Krishna, Madhavi, Kanyaka, Maya, Narayani, Ishani, Sharada, and Ambika. So the people that worship the energy of Krishna are called Shaktas. Now, energy means Shakti. And so those who worship that energy exclusively, they're called Shaktas. So normally they're worshippers of Durga Devi in various forms, although you should know that there is an in Vrindavan group, I think they're called Radha Ballabha Sampradaya. They follow someone named Sri Hitvams. And they believe that Krishna is an expansion of Radharani. Radharani's first and Krishna comes second. So they're sort of a kind of Shaktas, although they don't worship Durga, they worship Radha. They worship her as independent of Krishna. They put on the Rasalila plays, the Radha Ballava Sampradaya. So they're not considered to be a deviant group. They're not considered to be proper Vaishnavas. But anyway, that's happened. So, but generally, the Shaktas, they're worshippers of the material energy. He says, so Krishna and his energy appeared simultaneously. So there are these two groups. He says sometimes there's a rivalry between them. And he says, essentially, those who are interested in material enjoyment are Shaktas, because they worship her for all kinds of material benedictions and so on. And if the Shaktas become interested in spiritual salvation, which they sometimes do, he says generally, then they become, then they're Mayavadis, they're impersonalists. One professor of mine had a long discussion with one of the priests in the Kali temple in Calcutta. And so he was representing himself as a devotee of Kali, how devoted he was to her and so on. But he told me he kept pushing and pushing him philosophically to find out what his final position was. And he finally admitted that she was illusory and the only real thing was impersonal Brahman. Although he said he didn't like to admit it, that's what he really thought. Yeah. So again, they say they're devotees, but they actually are Mayavadis at heart. There are some Mayavadis, people, materialists who want to enjoy the material world. They can also be Mayavadis in the sense that they think that beyond this material world there's impersonal Brahman, but they're still more interested in enjoying the material world than they are merging with Brahman. That's most people are like that, actually. Anyway, they're shaktas, mostly interested in material enjoyment. Of course, one famous shakta priest, Gadadhar Chatterjee, his name, and took as a priest of the Kali temple, then became famous as Ramakrishna, and preach Mayavad philosophy. But he even decided that his wife was incarnation of Durga, and he was reputed to have worshipped her as such. So he was typical people like that. They become interested in salvation. And when they do, they're Mayavadis. But for the most case, their energies of the worshippers, they do so for material benediction or for becoming powerful through mystic, various sorts of mystic or tantric practices and so on. So this is their activities. There's a description of her, Durga, given in the Brahma Samhita. And there's a nice purport which describes her. Bhaktisiddhanta gives a purport. The text is Shasti Stiti Pralaya Sarana Shaktireka Chayeva Yasya Bhupanani Vibharti Durga Ichchanu Rupa Api Yasya Chachishtite Sa Govinda Madi Purusham Tamaham Bhajami. So this is describing the external potency, Shakti. This Shakti is Sisti Stiti Pralaya Sarana. In charge of the process, the agency of Sisti, creation, Stiti, preservation, and Pralaya, destruction. So that energy which brings about this process, that energy is Durga. Chayiva, like a shadow. Chaya means shadow. So she is like a shadow. She moves like a shadow. Ichcha anurupam api yasya chacheshtate, and she conducts herself according to the will of Govinda. So the purport, earlier he's mentioned Lord Brahma has mentioned the he's mentioned three realms: Goloka Namni, Nijadamni, Tale Chatasya, and then Devi Mahesha Haridam Asuteshu Teshu. He mentions Devi Dham, the realm of Devi, Mahesh Dham, the realm of Shiva, Haridam, the realm of the Lord in Vaikuntha, and then above all of them, Goloka, the realm of Krishna. Devi Maheshu Haridama Suteshu Teshu. So then here in this verse he describes Durga, Sisti Stiti Palaya Sadhana Shakti Reka Chayiva Yasha. So Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur says, the world in which Brahma takes his stand and hymns the Lord of Goloka is Devi Dham. consisting of the 14 worlds, and Durga is its presiding deity. She is 10-armed, representing the tenfold fruitive activities. She rides on a lion, representing her heroic prowess. She tramples down Mahishasura, one of the demons she kills, representing the subduer of vices. She is the mother of two sons, Kartikeya and Ganesh. Kartikeya is also known as Skanda. Well, who knows what he rides? You see him, he's got a vahana, a carrier. Yeah, there's a peacock. He rides a peacock. And the other, Ganesh. Who's Ganesh? Yeah. Yeah. So she's the mother, Durga's the mother, Lord Shiva's the father. These are the two sons, Kartikeya and Ganesh. Ganesh has an elephant's head. What does he ride? A rat, really. Which must be something to see. She is the mother of two sons, Kartikeya and Ganesh, representing beauty and success. So all these material things are there. Ganesh is worshipped for the removal of obstacles in the material world. She is placed between Lakshmi and Saraswati, representing mundane opulence and mundane knowledge. She is armed with the 20 weapons, representing the various pious activities enjoined in the Vedas for suppression of vices. She holds a snake, representing the beauty of destructive time. Such is Durga, possessing all these manifold forms. Durga is possessed of Durga, which means a prison house. When the jivas, begotten of the marginal potency, tatastha shakti, forget the service of Krishna, they are confined in the mundane prison house, the citadel of Durga. The wheel of karma is the instrument of punishment at this place. The work of purifying these penalized jivas is the duty devolved upon Durga. She is incessantly engaged in discharging the same by the will of Govinda. Prabhupada says that Durga has a thankless task. She is working. Ichchan urupa api yasya cheshte sa. So the alluring feature of the material energy, that's all under the jurisdiction of Durga. So her job is to keep the conditioned souls in her prison, in Maya. But she's doing this by the will of Krishna. Sometimes I've heard devotees say, "The devil is a beautiful woman." They mean Durga, Maya Devi. Because sometimes she seems to correspond in some ways to the functions ascribed to the devil. I wouldn't confuse people too much by using that line myself, but there is no devil. I mean, she's not bad. Anyone with that much power, like Durga, or actually who's more like the devil is Shiva, in the sense that a lot of the activities in satanic rituals more closely approximate some of the things that are done in the worship of Lord Shiva, or Shiva and Durga together by the left-handed tantrics. That's There's this religion in the mode of ignorance. Or you can have it secularized form of bondage and discipline or whatever. Anyway, this is going on in India, everywhere, this kind of mode of ignorance stuff. In which the attempt to take vicious, degraded activities and make them sacred or invest them with some kind of higher potency. But there isn't anybody who corresponds. All the big enemies of Krishna are little. The devil, at least, is represented by all the kinds of Christians you run across in the street, evangelical, fundamentalist Protestants. It's almost like a separate, independent God. They seem to think that if you think that God is all-powerful, then the devil has to be serving God also. He can't really be an anti-God of any great proportions. Anyway, it seems like it's a kind of comes from Lord Shiva. These kinds of activities. But anyway, it's Durga's business, and Lord Shiva is, although Lord Shiva has many dubious friends and is worshipped and gives benedictions to very bad people, he is also not antagonistic to Krishna. Neither is Durga antagonistic to Krishna. They're just performing thankless tasks. So this is just like when Lord Shiva appears as Shankaracharya. He comes to foster the development of Kali Yuga. And so he appears to act in such a way that's antagonistic to devotional service, even though he's a devotee. So Maya is doing her job also, her thankless task. Now, the thankless task that she performs is to see how badly we want Krishna. So any devotee who says to himself, I want to surrender to Krishna, and Durga says, I don't believe you. Do you really? And then she says, well, how about this? How about that? So she attacks the devotee and tests his or her determination to surrender to Krishna by offering various sorts of allurements to see if one has the strength of mind to resist them. Just like she appeared before in person, actually. Usually she doesn't appear in person to most devotees. She just sends a little representative of some kind or another. But of course she appeared in person to Haridas Thakur. Tried to distract him from his japa, and she was extraordinarily beautiful, but he was not tempted. But anyway, that's what happens. That's Durga's business. And Prabhupada says her business is to keep rascals out of the spiritual world. Because all the rascals are here, therefore the spiritual world is a nice place. If the rascals went there, it would immediately become the material world. They'd set up casinos, so on. And so they're they're kept here. That's her business, is to keep everyone imprisoned. She doesn't really keep us imprisoned against our will. She just tests our will to see what it actually is. Because it's easy for us to say, I want Krishna consciousness and to be in love with the idea of it. But when it comes down to it, we still cherish material desires in our heart. So Durga says to the devotee, I'll fulfill all your material desires. So devotees are tested in this way by Durga. She doesn't like doing this work, but that's her business. For the ones who are remaining in the material world, she also purifies. Because ultimately, the process of repeated birth and death in the material world is a purifying process. So he says, the work of purifying these penalized jivas is the duty devolved upon Durga. She is incessantly engaged in discharging the same by the will of Govinda. When, luckily, the forgetfulness of Govinda on the part of the imprisoned jivas is remarked by them, when he says is remarked by them, means they notice it. Oh, I've forgotten Krishna. People who have forgotten Krishna don't know they've forgotten Krishna. So the first step in remembering Krishna is to notice the fact that I've forgotten Krishna. So how do we come to notice it? He says, when luckily the forgetfulness of Govinda on the part of imprisoned jivas is remarked by them, by coming in contact with self-realized souls, and their natural aptitude for the loving service of Krishna is aroused, Durga herself then becomes the agency of their deliverance by the will of Govinda. So it behooves everybody to obtain the guileless grace of Durga, the mistress of this prison house, by propitiating her with the selfless service of Krishna. So, what does it mean? Durga becomes the agency of their deliverance by the will of Govinda. When we surrender to Krishna and pass the test administered by Durga, then the same material energy which operated to bind us begins to act in a different way, and it operates to liberate us. That means that our life airs, our senses, sense objects, all engaged in the service of Krishna become agencies of deliverance. In other words, this Durga, the external potency, turns into internal potency. Really, as Prabhupada describes, there's one potency. Krishna has one potency. But it's manifest in different ways, and he uses that potency. Prabhupada uses the analogy of electricity, that it can be directed either to heat or to cool. It can go into a radiator, what do you call it? A heater. And it can give heat, or it can go into a refrigerator and give cold. So it's really the same potency. But that same potency will act to connect the living entity with Krishna. When it acts to connect the living entity with Krishna, it's called internal potency. And when it acts to separate the living entity from Krishna, it's called external potency. Bahiranga Shakti and Antaranga Shakti. So really it's the same potency with different facets or aspects. So Durga, if Durga is seen properly, that although she is the deluding potency, she herself is not deluded. And neither is she independent or separate from Krishna. So if we see the so-called illusory energy in connection with Krishna, by using all of it in connection with Krishna, then it loses that illusory capacity. And instead, it reminds us of Krishna and connects us with Krishna. So therefore, he says, Durga, who acts to bind the conditioned soul, now acts to release the conditioned soul. He says, therefore, it behooves us to achieve the guileless grace of Durga, not the deluding grace of Durga, but the real grace of Durga. By propitiating her with the selfless service of Krishna. That's how we worship her. People say, oh, you don't worship her. Yes, we do. When we worship Krishna, we worship her. That is our sacrifice to her, is our service to Krishna. The boons received from Durga in the shape of wealth, property, recovery from illness, of wife and sons, should be realized as the deluding kindness of Durga. I remember a number of years ago, some Durga devotees in India were doing a mail out, we were on their mailing list, I guess all the ISKCON temples. I got this big envelope from India, and inside there was a Durga medal. It had a stamped image of Durga, you know, with her 10 arms and on the lion on the one side, and the other side there was a yantra, a geometrical representation of a mantra. And you were supposed to wear this, and there was a little Durga prasad, some little piece of hard candy contained in this. And there was instructions on how to chant the Devi Gayatri, Gayatri mantra to Durga. And then there was a long, it was a booklet of testimonials, of which people testified that having worn this medallion and chanted the Devi Gayatri, they got wife, sons, recovered from illness, wealth, property, refrigerators, various other kinds of consumer goods. And it was quite a testimonial. A few years later, our temple on Woodlawn Street, just across Chelton Avenue, was an outfit called the Central Association of the Miraculous Medal. These people were devoted to Virgin Mary, as she had appeared at a certain place in a certain time and had given people's instructions what to do. And the Central Association of the Miraculous Medal gave you a medallion with Mary's picture on it, and also certain prayers that you had to recite. You had to have them wear the medallion and recite the prayers, and there was a book of testimonials that came with it of people who had worn this medallion and so on, and they got house, employment, removal from illness. The one thing that seemed to be different in the testimonials was many more of the, there was a lot of the prayers were for fallen husbands to become good Catholics again. So there was a lot of that, a kind of benediction. But otherwise, they were quite It looked like the same system was there for anyway, a little lesson in comparative religion. So those boons, wealth, property, recovery from illness, wife, sons, and so on, they're deluding kindness of Durga. It actually is not a boon in the sense that it causes our reconciliation with being in material nature, and we should not be reconciled to that position. The mundane psychical jubilations of Dasha Maha Vidya, the 10 goddesses or forms of Durga. Isn't that far out? The mundane psychological jubilations, psychical jubilations of Dasha Maha Vidya, the 10 goddesses or forms of Durga, are elaborated for the delusion of the fettered souls of this world. Fettered means bound by chains. Jiva is a spiritual atomic part of Krishna. When he forgets his service of Krishna, he is at once deflected by the attracting power of Maya in this world, who throws him into the whirlpool of mundane fruitive activity, karma, by confining him in a gross body constituted by the 5 material elements, their 5 attributes and 11 senses, resembling the garb of a prisoner. You know, the prisoners, they got their names, you know, so we have our whole prison outfit. This is the... In this whirlpool, Jiva has experience of happiness and miseries, heaven and hell. Besides this, there's a subtle body consisting of the mind, intelligence, and ego inside the gross body. By means of the subtle body, the jiva forsakes one gross body and takes recourse to another. The jiva cannot get rid of the subtle body, full of nescience and evil desires, unless and until he is liberated. He just can't shake it off. Liberation from the gross body comes easily at the time of death. You're released from the gross body, but because you cannot shake off the subtle body, you again... Another gross body docks on. Off you go. On getting rid of the subtle body, he bathes in the Viraja and goes up to Haridam. Such are the duties performed by Durga in accordance with the will of Govinda. Durga, worshipped by the people of this mundane world, is the Durga described above. Srishti, Stiti, Pralaya, Sadhana, Shakti, Rekha. But the spiritual Durga, which is the outer covering of the spiritual, mentioned in the mantra, which is the outer covering of the spiritual realm of the Supreme Lord, is the eternal maidservant of Krishna and is therefore the transcendental reality whose shadow, the Durga of this world, functions in this mundane world as her maid servant. Any questions? Yeah.